Hello, this is Brian Cogman, and I wrote this episode.
I'm Kit Harrington, and I play Jon Snow in this episode.
And this is the absolutely incredible, mind-blowing opening credit sequence. I geek out every time I watch it.
Yeah, it blows you away. The first time I saw this, it was pretty impressive. I was kind of stunned by it. I didn't know what to expect at all as to how they put this together. It wasn't what I expected, but it really is quite fantastic.
Fans of the books will know that the first page, really, in the books are these wonderful maps that any reader of George's series keeps flipping back to as he's reading or she is reading to kind of get grounded and know where you are, and that's sort of what this opening credit sequence is meant to do. I think it does a great job of letting viewers know that we're in a different world right off the bat. And of course, Ramin's main title theme is just extraordinary.
The music's pretty stirring as well.
Absolutely.
I had a kind of private moment when I first heard the music where I thought, this is, it really got my blood going. It's
yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
Especially this end bit here when the sword's coming.
Oh, there it is. You got the sigils there too.
Yeah, fantastic.
And there's my favorite part right there.
And there you are.
Yeah, we're writing season 2 now, and I write the series now listening to the soundtrack.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
This is, of course, Bran's dreams. In the book, they're much more elaborate. There are these scenes where he's flying, basically, up alongside this three-eyed crow that speaks to him, and we couldn't really do that, but these are meant to fill in for those dreams in the book.
It's more scary than I had it in my head when I read the books, the three-eyed crow. I had this weird sort of huge, elaborate three-eyed crow.
Ooh, there he is.
And it's much more realistic than the one I had in my head.
The little lord's been dreaming again.
Oh, and there's Margaret John, who's sadly no longer with us.
Yeah.
We have visitors.
I don't want to see
this. This little bit is fun. This is meant to mirror a scene later in the series that we haven't even come to yet, which I won't spoil here.
Anyway, you don't have a choice.
Once we get there, you'll know what I'm talking about.
I don't want to go.
Neither do I.
Margaret did my favourite speech in the whole thing. The speech about the White Walkers.
Hold on.
And the things from up north. I thought that was just spine-chilling.
Absolutely.
Help Bran down the hall.
Yes, she will be missed.
Very much so.
And here we have the first appearance of Hodor, played by Christian Nairn.
This really did his back in, didn't it?
Oh, man, poor guy.
Man.
I don't know what we're going to do in future seasons, because Isaac's only going to get bigger. We're going to have to invent some kind of wagon that Hodor wheels around.
Winterfell while my father is away.
And you might learn a lord's courtesy.
Little standoff between Peter and Richard.
Hello, Bran. Do you remember anything about what happened?
He has no memory of that.
Yeah, the title of this episode is Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things, which is taken from a line that Tyrion has here in a second. And it's funny because when we blocked out the season,
Neil Hodor.
Initially, it really just came down to, you know, the first 80 pages, next 80 pages, and I just was basically given a section to work with. And then later, after we'd shot much of the season, that's when we put the titles to the episodes. When I sat down to think about what to call this one, sort of by accident, it seemed to be an episode that really focused on the outcasts of the world. You know, the cripples, the bastards, the broken things.
It seems the right title for it, doesn't it? It's a great line.
Yeah.
Will I really be able to ride?
You will. On horseback, you'll be as tall as any of them.
Is this some kind of trick? Why do you want to help me?
Here we go.
I have a tender spot in my heart. Cripples, bastards, and broken things.
Love the way Peter says bastards.
Yeah.
The hospitality of Winterfell is yours.
Spare me your false courtesies, Lord.
What I love about this scene, too, is that Tyrion's gone through his entire life, you know, being treated as less than human. And, of course, he doesn't know that the only reason Rob is treating him this way is he thinks he and his family tried to kill his brother. He doesn't know that. He just assumes Rob's being a dick.
Come to see me off, Greyjoy. Kind of you. Your master doesn't seem to like Lannisters.
He's not my master.
No, of course not. What happened here? Where is Lady Stark? Why didn't she receive me?
She wasn't feeling well.
She's not in Winterfell, is she? Where did she go?
This scene was shot very late. It might have been the last scene shot for this episode. I actually wrote it in Malta when we were well into shooting the latter half of the season.
How do you think Balin Greyjoy would feel if he could see his only surviving son?
And it was basically because we realized that Theon, the character of Theon Greyjoy, played here by Alfie Allen, we needed to understand a little bit about his backstory and why he's there earlier in the season. So this was designed for that. And it also gave us an opportunity to have these two spar with each other a little bit, because otherwise they don't really have any scenes with each other really in the entire series.
We're outnumbered 10-1.
A stupid rebellion, then. I suppose your father realized that when your brothers died in battle. Now here you are, your enemy's squire.
Careful, imp.
I've offended you. Forgive me. It's been a rough morning.
You get the feeling in this scene that Tyrion really doesn't take a shining to Theon.
Yeah, I think so. I think he can read people really well, and he can sense the anger boiling within Theon, possibly because he feels that way himself. Again, it's an episode about outcasts in the end, and you know, Theon being a ward of House Stark and doesn't really feel as though he belongs, and he's there under dangerous circumstances.
Absolutely.
Left foot forward.
Enough about him. Let's get to this good-looking man here.
So this is the scene where I've bonded with my Night's Watch fellows from the last episode anyway.
Tell them your name.
And our introduction to Sam, played by the wonderful John Bradley.
Played by the wonderful, wonderful John Bradley.
I've come to take the black.
Come to take the black pudding?
And we're all quite confused as to what he is and why he's here, and it's quite obvious from the start that he's going to get a hard time, which he does, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, that scene there, John, you know, got padded up as much as possible so he wouldn't get too bruised. And he didn't complain once, but he was, he was in a little bit of pain afterwards.
This was his first scene, wasn't it? Was this the first scene you all shot together?
It was his first scene, yeah. Oh, it might have been the first scene we all shot together, yeah.
I think this was the first Castle Black recruit scene.
It was, yeah. He yielded.
This was a fun day. Sam and John, their relationship and their friendship and their storyline, it may be my favorite in the entire series, and that's a lot of relationships and a lot of storylines.
Yeah.
When I realized that I was going to get to write this introduction, I was just thrilled.
All you got to do is get past the bastard.
Past the bastard.
I was terrified that I'd meet these Night's Watch boys and, you know, having to have to spend a lot of time with each other.
Mm.
That we wouldn't get on, but, you know, we get on very well, all of us.
Yeah,
even me and that boy there who I'm beating the crap out of.
Yeah, Luke. Who's a lovely guy in life.
Really lovely guy. Plays a nasty bloke very well.
Go clean the armory. That's all you're good for.
Oh, there's Owen Teal. I saw Owen many years ago in a production of A Doll's House in New York, and he blew me away. And any time I could catch him in a film or a play, I would sit up and be so excited. So when he came in to be Sir Alistair, I was, you know, I'm basically, you know, having the time of my life with this, because this cast is full of such incredible UK talent. Actors that I've admired for years and years. I mean, it's really just a joy to watch everybody play off each other. I'm sure for you it's a thrill to act with them as well.
It's awe-inspiring.
War's no place for cowards.
Well, you're right, I'm sorry.
That was my favourite fight of all the fights I got to do.
Oh, yeah?
I think, yeah. There's one in episode 3 where I'm surrounded by people and take out one person at a time. but that one seemed to flow the best. That was the one I enjoyed the most, I think.
Yeah.
People think we're cowards too.
Too stupid to be a coward.
You're too stupid to be.
We just give Gren and Pip their own spin-off. We should do webisodes with Gren and Pip.
Yeah, they had their own spin-off while we were filming, to be
yeah,
honest.
True.
Those two were just...
Cameras just weren't rolling.
Yeah.
Ah, now we are across the narrow sea in Vias Dothrak. And believe it or not, this is a Northern Ireland location.
Is it? I thought this was in Malta.
Can you believe it? No, that is Northern Ireland.
Is it really?
Northern Ireland location called Sandy Bray. Some of this is CGI, but these trees, those are in Northern Ireland, and they look like they should be in Africa or something, but it's this incredible location that our locations guy, Robbie, found, and I believe it's close to the southern border, if I remember correctly.
Savages can do.
These are my people now. You shouldn't call them savages.
I'll call them what I like, because they're my...
So here we have the extraordinary Emilia Clarke as Daenerys, and Harry Lloyd as her brother, Viserys, and Ian Glenn as Ser Jorah. Our Danny cast, as we would call them. We have sort of the Danny cast, we have the John cast, and that's one of the great things about this show is in many ways it's three or four shows for the price of one. You have John's storyline at the Wall with its own cast, and you have Danny's story across the narrow sea, and it was fun to drop into these different worlds as we were shooting, and a great challenge weaving all of them together, figuring out how to transition and cut from one to another.
But if they did...
King Robert is fool enough to meet them in open battle.
I find it quite exciting that you can drop in from the ice worlds that we've just seen, where I spend my time, straight to these across the narrow sea. To the hot, arid country. And the colour schemes are different as well. I really like that about what I've seen in this series. Obviously, I only got to see bits of the stuff I did up north, mainly.
Yeah.
With the kind of cold blues, and then you drop into these bits, and it's these warm oranges and reds and browns. So it completely differentiates the different worlds.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Ah. I'm sure he enjoyed this scene.
Here we go. Now, this is a wonderful scene that I did not write, but I was delighted.
Did you?
I didn't, and I think when we wrote it, it was a later scene. We wrote some extra scenes to fill in some gaps. You know, when you step back and look at the whole thing as it's coming together, you realize, oh, you know, we didn't service this character here or this storyline here or bits of information that need to come out earlier. And so this was one of those scenes, and David and Dan wrote it. I thought it was going to go in episode 3, and I was delighted when I was watching it at home, and it was in my episode, but I did not write it.
The brave men rode them. Rode them from Valyria to build a greater civilization. This world has...
This is the scene that, I mean, Harry Lloyd does it brilliantly, does it absolute justice. And Roxanne as well. And it's just the scene where you see Viserys in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one bit, you know, where he's not quite that spoiled brat, where you see his reasons.
Melted together, like so.
And I think it really helps that scene later on where he dies so horribly.
Yeah, it ended up being, I think, an absolutely essential scene for the development of his character. So I'm thrilled that we ended up doing it.
Yeah.
Really? Why dragons?
They can fly. And wherever they are, just...
He's one of the broken things. Really, the Targaryen line.
Far away.
And that's what the scene is about. It was the greatest dynasty that the world had ever known. And it's his family history.
That tries to hurt them. Gets burned away to nothing. Melted.
It's easy when you're reading the book. The Daenerys chapters are purely from her point of view, and you only see them through her eyes.
Yes.
What's so fun about writing the show is you can have scenes like this that give you different perspectives.
Well, after 15 years in a pleasure house...
I think that, coupled with Harry's incredible, sensitive, and intelligent performance, really made him much more three-dimensional than he could have been. He could have easily just been a screaming, you know, villain.
He could have been just a bad guy, and it's just a spoilt brat, but... It gives you a sense of how hard it is to lose something like the Iron Throne. Watching him having, you know, been promised this thing and not having got it.
Absolutely.
And it's turned him into who he is, essentially, which is a very nasty young man.
No, last one died many years before I was born.
These scenes, one of the bloggers, and I try not to read the blogs, but by the end they were calling them sexposition scenes, which we have a few of in the first season, where essential information is conveyed in a scene of some randy behavior and possible nudity.
The one's closest to the door with a light.
I don't think it was a conscious thing. I mean, I think it just sort of happened that way. I think Roxanne's character has a line in, I believe, the second episode where she says, men like to talk when they're happy.
Closer to the Iron Throne.
And this is certainly an example of that where, you know, he's opening up to her in many ways.
There was Giscar and Valrion, Vermithrax.
Vermithrax, which genre fans will know is the name of the dragon in the film Dragon Slayer. That's a little Dan Weiss shout out to one of the great 80s fantasy films.
And Beleriand the Dread, whose fire.
Also, kind of this scene portrays the importance of the dragons, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think I could be wrong, but, you know, he talks about waking the dragon in the first few episodes, but I believe this is the first episode where you really get the connection that there were dragons, that it's not just a sigil, but that they existed, they were, you know, a huge part of the Targaryen history.
Oh, that's very sad.
Yes, it is.
It's interesting because, you know, George has so much mythology, and believe it or not, there's only a fraction of it that we were able to convey in the show. But you have to sort of pick and choose where you thread bits of information in, you know.
You think I bought you to make Khal Drogo happy?
That's probably, at least for me, one of the biggest challenges in writing the show, because there's so much there.
Oh, you pretty little idiot.
And you want to have it all in there, but it's... you've got to find fun ways to put it in there.
I find the ending of this scene so hard to watch.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
Yeah, he puts her in her place, doesn't he?
Yeah. Someday, your husband will sit there, and you will sit by his side. And one day, before too long...
And here we have Sansa and the Scepter. And the Iron Throne.
And the Iron Throne.
Incredible prop.
God's be good, you'll have boys.
It had a bizarre effect on all the actors in the cast, really, didn't it? Because it was in the paint hall, and I was desperate to get into the paint hall, to get into the Iron Throne, to sit on the Iron Throne. So not only does it have the effect in fictional terms in the series, but all of the actors wanted to sit on it themselves. And get their picture on it and things.
Nobody could ever. Yeah, you're right. There is a power. Nonsense. You know, I've had relatives visit, and they want to sit there. They want. It definitely draws people in.
Yeah. It's beautifully made.
It is. It's extraordinary. It's exactly how I pictured it in my mind's eye.
Do you remember your lessons? Who built the Iron Throne?
This episode's. It's funny, sitting back and watching it, it does have a lot of mythology in it.
And how many years did it take to build
my grandfather?
These first few episodes of the series really are more about laying the groundwork and, you know, the textures, the histories, the relationships, you know, what they're all bringing to it. And then, you know, about halfway through, really, at the end of episode 5 is when the story itself kind of kicks off, and then it's just bang, 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 bang. But I do think that those later episodes, that they wouldn't mean as much if you didn't take the time in these first few episodes to really make sense of the world.
Yeah, and invest in the world.
Yeah.
The Hand wants no part of it.
Call it what you will, Lord Stark, sir. The city is packed with people and more.
These are the small council scenes. These are some of my favorite scenes in the book.
Tavern riot, a brothel fire, three.
I wish we had room for more of them in the series, because they're really where the game is played most.
Perhaps the city watch should be commanded by someone who can.
It's a real snake pit, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You'll get 50. Lord Baelish will see it paid for.
I will.
You found money for a champion's.
This was a fun day. We shot all of the small council scenes in a row over a couple days. I think they were the first scenes that all of these actors had.
Thank you, my Lord Hansa.
Pretty tough scenes to jump in with. A lot of exposition and story.
This is over, the better.
The realm prospers.
Strange sounding names that you have to pronounce, but man, seeing these actors together in one room, I was just on cloud nine, watching Sean Bean and Julian and Aiden and Conliff.
I'm sure the Tony puts coins in many a pocket.
And of course, Gethin, who's phenomenal, who plays Renly.
There's nothing else, my lords.
It's wonderful to watch because they're all, you know, as characters in competition with each other, and, mm-hmm. you know, with their lingo, with how they speak, you know, outdoing each other. And all the actors are, of course, working wonderfully together. They're almost having a competition in acting.
I've been hoping to talk to you.
Each one is doing such brilliant stuff. It works so well with what their characters are doing.
His death was a great sadness to all of us. I took personal charge of his care. But...
And that throne room's fantastic as well. Yeah. Huge, absolutely huge.
A massive set. That's at the paint hall.
And very fast.
We have four massive cells where various sets are built.
Lord John often came to me for counsel.
Why?
This scene is fun. This scene was very hard to get right.
For many years.
I struggled with this scene probably more than any other in the episode.
What did John want the night before he died?
Oh, he came inquiring after a book.
It's potentially an incredibly dry and boring scene because you're talking about the death of a character that you've never met. You only hear about John Aaron, apart from seeing his dead body lying out in the pilot.
No, I'd like to read it.
But in the hands of these two actors, even if it was the most uninteresting Dullsville scene, and I hope it isn't, but even if it was, these two would make it riveting because they just inject so much humor and tension into it.
Noble ladies and their children.
Now this book, this Lineages of the Great Houses, I wrote every single bit in there. I didn't actually do the calligraphy, but that's all actual family trees and family histories that I wrote up.
Once a lord,
did you really, Brian?
I did indeed. So if you pause that and you can make out the scribblings, it all makes sense.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Died in his 14th year of a wound sustained in a bear hunt.
As I said, my lord, a ponderous...
I once had a message given to me about Bran, who'd woken up. And it was this tiny little capsule that a raven's supposed to carry.
Did he say anything to you during his final hours?
It was just a little wooden thing, and I thought nothing of it, because it's never opened in the scene. We don't actually open it and read it, you know, it's just given to me.
The seed is strong.
And I opened it up, and it's this wonderful little piece of paper with a message written on it in beautiful calligraphy, whatever the word is for writing calligraphy, and it blew me away, the detail that the props department went into and the set department is incredible.
Yeah, they're heroic.
And you're quite certain he died of a natural illness.
Well, what else could it be?
Poison.
I wrote the text for every Raven scroll and message on this show. And then they went and actually, of course, physically wrote them. But,
what sort of man would dare?
I've heard it said that poison is a woman's weapon.
Yes. Women?
You know, David and Dan and our directors were very keen on getting every detail right.
Did you know that Lord Varys is a eunuch?
Everybody knows that.
Did you know that Lord Varys is a eunuch? I love that. Julian's great. He you know, Pycelle plays the doddering old fool, but there's something else going on behind there.
No trouble at all, my lord. It's a great honor.
Thank you. I'll find my own way out.
He plays a very wily old man, doesn't he? He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. Now, this was a great day. This was the first scene that I wrote that we shot. This was a real thrill. Episode 4 is actually the first episode we shot of the whole first season, aside from the original pilot. And so we were sort of discovering how to do the show as we shot this.
Tomorrow.
Do we do 3, 4, and 5 kind of all together, Kit? That's about right, right?
I think so, yeah. So this was very near the start of us filming?
Yeah.
And as light as feathers. You have to be quick to catch them.
He's right about that.
Now the Bran's awake.
I think this script probably changed the most from the original draft to what you're seeing now. And then there's a few reasons for that. One, of course, is that I'm relatively a novice writer as opposed to David and Dan, so I think there was a lot of work to make my dialogue and my style sort of mesh with theirs. And also it was just figuring out from a production standpoint what we were capable of doing. And
we might raise castles. Might Brandon the builder.
Can I be Lord of a Holdfast?
Oh, Maisie. These kids
are
amazing.
My mum loved this scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my wife loves this scene. This is her favorite scene in the series.
Knights and princes and lords.
For me, the heart of this show is this family. And I mean, the show's about a lot of things, but what I always come back to is it's about this fundamentally decent, good, loving family that finds themselves embroiled in a terrible situation that really tears them apart. That's what I always try to come back to when we're writing it.
Hello.
Sir Alistair
Sandler, your new watch partner.
That's priceless. That's my favorite bit that you do the whole season, Kit, is that look.
That little look.
You're like, oh, I have to be a watch partner with this guy.
During this scene, we were obviously meant to be completely freezing. We're at the top of the wall. It's night. In actual fact, we were in a paint hall inside. And the close-up bits, which you're about to see...
I don't like high places.
You can't fight.
For lighting, we had to basically enclose me in a kind of what they call witches' candles, up full flame. So in this, I'm absolutely boiling. I was sweating. And so was John there. He was sweating. And we had to keep mopping the sweat away and sort of at the same time pretending that we were absolutely freezing. It was kind of ridiculous. But it was a good scene to do. It was fun.
You'd never know. You look freezing right there.
Okay, good.
It's written all over your face.
He said.
This is probably my favorite scene in the episode.
And somewhere in these woods, your horse will stumble, and you'll be thrown from your saddle to die.
This is absolutely heartbreaking.
It also fits into the cripples, bastards, and broken things category,
absolutely.
Doesn't it? He's a broken thing.
He is, and that's what I love about this friendship, is they and really, John and all his watch friends, you know, they found each other there, and they heal each other, essentially.
I'm not going to get any better, you know.
Well, you can't get any worse.
That's great.
John learns a lesson of Tyrion, I suppose, about...
Mm.
He's always wanted to look out for people who are weak, who have been cast out, who are rejects, because, of course, he's been cast out from the world to an extent. And so he meets Sam, and he instantly kind of wants to be friends with this guy who has so much in common with him.
After
his master's untimely death.
Knighted for what?
That's Aidan Gillen.
That's Aidan Gillen.
Where is Sir Hugh?
I was a huge fan of The Wire.
Oh, me too. Me too. When I found out that he was reading for the role, I thought, oh, great. We gotta get him. This is great.
Now look, there. You've got two characters from two of my favourite shows having a conversation here. You've got...
From Sharp.
Sean from Sharp and Aidan from The Wire.
Larissa the Queen. No, she's one of my...
Anyone who's watching this who has not seen Sharp... Rent the Sharp film series. It is phenomenal, and Sean is brilliant in it.
Very much so.
Yes.
It's not as well known in the States. Yeah, I get the feeling here everyone watched it. Paragon of yours. I don't know if I'm supposed to advertise other companies' television shows on the commentary, but there it is.
In the city, he lives in a large house at the top of the Street of Steel.
Why?
I have my observers, as I said. And it's possible that
this is in Malta. This is actually at the presidential palace in Malta.
Several times in the weeks.
I heard a rumor that the president wandered up to the set and watched filming for a few minutes and then walked away.
Walked away.
Distrusting me was the wisest thing you've done since you climbed off your horse.
That's one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, that's right out of the book. That's George R. R. Martin right there, folks. A lot of these scenes. I pretty much just lifted them off the page from the book and put them on and then said written by Brian Cogman. But I mean, you know, this is George's baby. This is his thing.
So Hugh,
as you can see, I'm busy.
I'm here on behalf of
Sir Hugh.
Of
this is Sir Hugh of the Vale, isn't it?
Yeah.
Played by an actor called Bob.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Fantastic guy.
No, sir. Oh, does he go by, his name is Jefferson Hall. Does he go by Bob? That's funny.
Yeah, he went to my drama school.
Oh, really? No kidding.
You're above me.
He said he'd be glad to talk to the hand himself. He's a knight, you see.
Ah, a knight.
Now, there's a bit here, and I don't want to ruin this scene for anyone, where Jamie Sivers, who plays Jory, looks like a puppet because he's got little strings behind him. So I'm so sorry about that, but I had to point it out. If you look carefully.
Great, that's all I will ever think about now when I watch that scene.
There we go.
And someday, Jory, you'll be a real boy. Just don't tell lies.
As you wish, my lord.
Now here we have Gendry, who fans of the books will know plays a pretty significant role later on, played by Joe Dempsey.
Strong for his age. Works hard.
Show the hand the helmet you made, lad.
I was just really intrigued by Joe. I never met Joe Dempsey when we were doing read-throughs or anything. And I was really intrigued by him when I watched this because he's got something very quiet and strong about him on screen. And he plays Gendry perfectly.
Absolutely.
If his lordship wants the helmet, I made it for me.
Yeah, and sadly, I never got to meet him.
Give him, my lord.
There's nothing to
this is one of the few scenes from this episode that I wasn't able to be there for filming, but
you talk about?
We'll see him some more in season two.
What kind of questions?
I think he's got a kind of Pete Postlethwaite look about him.
Yeah, like a young kind of buff Pete Postlethwaite. Also from Sharp. Continue plugging Sharp the whole time.
Your mother.
Now this is, of course, the crucial moment.
What did you sell him?
Where Sean realizes what John Aaron was investigating before he was killed.
Yellow hair.
Man, Sean just nails it. Watch the wheels turning in his head. I just love this. I got so excited when I saw the dailies of this scene. There it is.
Get back to work, lad.
I think one of the reasons this season works so well, I think, is Sean being the anchor of this show.
You send him to me.
Ned is a tough character to play. There's so much play close to the vest. You need an actor with a presence so that you immediately know that you're going to be okay. He's on screen and you know where you stand.
Absolutely.
Should I leave it with...
Listen. Do you hear them? How many?
How was it working with him? I guess he only had a few scenes.
I did. I was terrified the first time. It was waiting to go on set to work with Sean because I'd grown up with Sharp and he was one of my all-time favourite actors and one of the reasons I wanted to become an actor.
As he insults my sister.
So to be in my first filming with him, doing a scene one-on-one with him, was terrifying. But he's so good with the young actors and so good with what he does. And so professional. It was just a joy. 5 minutes into working with him, I wasn't terrified at all anymore. I was just having fun. This is one of my favourite scenes. I keep saying that, but it really is. I really like this kind of standoff they
have. This is a great little scene, isn't it?
Yeah, the fight later on when he gets the knife through the face.
Do you remember Thoros Amir charging through the breach?
With his burning sword. I'll remember that till the day I die.
I saw the youngest of the Greyjoy lads at Winterfell. It was like seeing a shark.
One of the fun things about getting to write this show is it's scenes that you couldn't see from the book, because Jaime is not a POV character in the first book. Jory obviously never is.
I bet you smell a black...
So it's a way to get a different perspective and also to get some historical information out. We hear a little bit more about the Greyjoy Rebellion in this scene.
The message from Lord Stark.
I don't serve.
And you also
Lord
get to know Jory a little bit more before we kill him.
It's a wonderful scene to watch for Nikolai as well, because he, you know, this kind of quite cheeky, strong man suddenly looks so terribly upset and really hurt by what's going on inside the room. Now, right, here we go. Mark and Joe here, the stuff they're eating, they didn't realise how bad it tasted until they put it into their mouth. So you can see Mark trying to eat the food desperately, but it's so disgusting he can't quite come to swallow it.
So he plays the scene with it kind of wadded up in his mouth.
They were both trying desperately to hold.
Right,
Joe's just given up. Look, Joe's just not eating it at all.
That's great.
You are in love, Lord Snow.
But, you know, it's a very grin, you know, facial expression in the end, so it worked. Oh, Rast, you jerk.
If Thor puts me up against Lady Piggy, I'm going to slice me off a side of bacon.
Oh, you made him mad. You made him mad, Rast. And just when you thought it was safe to sleep in the barracks.
I think at this point here, I may have been a bit too violent with the rag.
Oh, ouch, yeah.
He didn't complain, though, good old
Luke. You're so committed. Hey, there's Ghost. No one touches some. Growling controversially, but, you know. In the book, Ghost is mute. That's a wonderful thing when you're reading a book. It's kind of hard to pull off on screen.
Yeah.
What are you waiting for?
We had the scene in post with no sound behind it, and it just didn't have the effect it needed. And without going into a bunch of kind of silly dialogue with, well, he's mute, that's why I named him Ghost, you know. So, sorry, Die Hard fans, we try our best. Mm. Now, this is another day that was like a sweltering day on the wall.
Yeah, this was boiling this day. It was one of the hottest days. I think this is the first day we filmed as well. This was another of the first things we filmed.
It was. I love John in this scene. John reminds me a little bit of the great Charles Laughton in this scene.
You think this is funny, do you?
Oh, man.
When you're out there, beyond the wall with the sun going down.
Yeah, I know, I feel like sometimes I just want to sit and watch the show and not talk because it's so absorbing.
I find that, especially when Owen's on screen, I just want to see what he's doing. He's a brilliant actor.
He gave John something to think about there.
Yeah.
You know, that's a teachable moment for Jon Snow.
You send this
oh, man.
To give me commands. I should have sent you back her head.
I know, it's so boring. I'm like, oh, this scene's great every time.
It's all right.
There's a brilliant moment in the scene, though, where Daenerys finds her strength, doesn't she? She suddenly turns, and it's Amelia nails it.
Do not command me.
Yeah, this is a huge scene for her.
I just wanted to invite you to supper.
And it's interesting, in the book she lashes out a couple times, and we sort of adjusted a similar scene in episode 3 to make her a little more passive, so that this scene would really have more of an impact.
You would turn me into one of them, wouldn't you? Next you'll want to braid my hair.
You've no right to a braid, you've won no victories yet.
And even that is more than she's ever done. You know, talking back to him.
You are a horse lord slut.
My friend, when we were watching this together, vocally cheered at that point.
Hell yeah, yeah.
I mean, gone out of her seat.
I look at Harry, he's just, both of them just, like, I don't even want to talk over her.
I am the wife of the great Carl, and I carry his son inside me. The next time you raise a hand to me will be the last time you have hands.
And again, gotta give David and Dan credit for that line. That line was in the original outline that you give to the network.
I know for a fact that...
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and I said, oh, we gotta put that in the scene.
Well, don't you think it's a little bit unfair?
Now, this scene is one of the later scenes that we wrote.
Sally on the side.
Well, after Sally shooting this episode.
This scene was a hard one to keep a straight face in.
Yeah.
There were certain moments.
Because, well, the way he's scrubbing the table.
Yeah. There's a bit coming up as well.
It's a weird task to give you anyway, frankly. It's like, here, scrub the table.
He might not like me as much.
This is actually a weirdly long day of filming this scene. Because of the amount of angles and the length of the scene, it took a long time.
No.
As a matter of fact,
this is a good example of how we end up, as writers, starting to shape the characters more and more to the actors that we've cast. I think it's fair to say that Sam in this scene is not the way the Sam of the book would act. But John brings this wonderful sense of humor, naturally, to the part, and we want to write to that.
A whore named Roz.
The character is still fundamentally the same, but there's just different shades to him because of what John brings to it. Same with you and same with all the actors on the show, and that's one of the fun things about writing for it.
You don't want to know.
What, that good?
That bit there was the bit very hard to keep straight. But then again, I don't think I was supposed to, so it wasn't too bad.
Did you not make love to Roz?
There we go, that bit.
With the big... This is the second scene that talks about Roz... The whore, played by Esme Bianco.
Why is my son Snow? Because you're a bastard from the north.
This scene sort of drifted at one point. Maybe it was going to be slot into episode 5.
My father wouldn't even tell me her name. I don't know if she's...
I think it's nice it lands in episode 4. Just because you've established... You know, this episode is very much it's establishing John and Sam and their relationship and making sure that it's very much there so that in the future that they've got this bond. And I think it's right that it all happens in the one episode.
But I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I agree. And also given the theme that kind of naturally...
What if we got her pregnant?
Developed of the episode of Outcasts and Bastards, and this is a lovely speech that David and I talked about, and I think I can safely say the idea of the speech... was mine, but David and Dan went on to write it.
It's a good life for a child.
But it's that lovely speech where he talks about how he couldn't go through with sleeping with the whore.
So, you didn't know where to put it?
That bit there, I wanted to jump over the table and grab him, so I said, can I give it a go? And I gave it a go, tried to jump over the table and absolutely stacked it on the floor. At which point Brian Kurt, the director, said maybe it'd be best if he just ran around the table.
Yeah, maybe. So let's
we decided on that instead.
Let's not overcomplicate this.
You boys even remember the last
This is a wonderful speech by Owen.
Oh, yeah, this is great. This is the Robert Shaw in Jaws speech.
I remember.
Was it uncomfortable at Winterfell? Were the days when you just couldn't get warm, never mind.
And again, this was, we wanted to write more for Owen. We stepped back and looked at the season and realized we had this incredible actor in this part and we weren't servicing him enough. So there's that, and then also you get essential information about what goes on beyond the wall.
Supposed to be a 2-week mission. We heard a rumor Mance Rayder was planning to attack Eastwatch. So we went out to look for some of his men. Capture them, gather some knowledge. The Wildens who fight for Mance Rayder are hard men. Harder than you'll ever be. They know their country better than we do. They knew.
While Thorne is a sadistic bully to John and the recruits, here you get a little bit of information about maybe why that is, and I think it's very compelling.
Exactly. I think one thing that George R. R. Martin does very well in the books is that he shows you reasons for why people are as they are. There's only reasons why people are doing what they're doing.
And all in darkness.
I think with some of the characters in the series, in the TV series,
you don't know Cole.
You see, it's something like this can go, okay, well, that's a reason. That's a reason why Thorne's like he is. If it's not in the books, kind of, you can imagine it would be.
Yeah, I hope so anyway, yeah.
To feed them, to keep them warm.
Purists may object. They might go, wait a minute, there's nothing in the book that says he went beyond the wall on a ranging mission. But in the show, he does.
Yeah, even in the books, you kind of get the feeling that that's there in the background.
Time up at the wall will do things to you.
Yeah.
We should have had a couple of boys like you along, shouldn't we?
John just continuing to try to scrub as he listens to him. See, little details like that, that's what a great actor does. I mean, the fact that he does not stop scrubbing the table.
Soon, we'll have new recruits. You lot will be passed along to the Lord Commander for assignment.
And this is a line that's from another scene in the book that we put in here.
Now, this was a genuinely very cold day.
Yeah, this was later in the process. You know, we started shooting at the end of July and ended in the worst Belfast winter since, I believe, 1982. man, there was no faking being cold there. Of course, I'm all wrapped up in layers and layers of coats in a nice warm tent. You guys are out there, you know.
I hit the dragon.
Your brother Rhaegar was the last dragon. Viserys is less than the shadow of a snake.
He is still the true king.
Truth now. Do you want to see your brother sitting on the Iron Throne?
Like the day we got stuck in the lift.
Oh, that's right. Oh, tell the people at home about that. That's a good story.
There was a day up at Castle Black set when me and John Bradley, who plays Sam, had a shot where we were coming down in the lift to find Uncle Benjen's horse had come back empty. And the lift went up about, I don't know, 100 feet or something quite high, and broke at about 100 feet up in the air. And it's a mechanical lift. Yeah. It's not electric or anything. So me and John were up there for about 25, 30 minutes before we started wondering exactly what had gone wrong. And we looked down, and it was the only time I started to get worried was when I saw everyone gathered down at the bottom, and at the front of this queue of people looking up at us with mild concern was the on-set nurse. And I thought, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, no kidding.
As they were winching us down by hand and all looking very, very worried. We were up there for about an hour while everyone decided to take a lunch break.
Oh, that's nice.
It was a good day. It was raining as well.
I'm sorry, do I... Sansa, dear, this is Lord Baelish. He's
Now, I think Sansa gets a bad rap. I'm gonna address some critics of Sansa. She is one of my favorite characters, and I have great affection for her as a character. I have great affection for Sophie and all of our young actors, too. They're absolutely extraordinary.
And I come from a little spit of land called the Fingers, so, you see, it's an exceedingly clever nickname.
I think Sansa, she's been told that the world is a certain way, and through the course of this season, and indeed the series, finds out that it's not. And some people find her behavior annoying and selfish, but she's a kid, she's a teenage girl, you know? And
I'd have to agree with you. I really like Sansa in the books.
Yeah.
I have no objections to her at all. I think she's misguided in a lot of ways.
Sure.
But she's by no means, in any way, lesser than any of the other children.
Absolutely.
I think she does some brilliant things in the books, like when she stands up to Joffrey with the dismembered heads. I love that moment.
Yeah. I think, in many ways, some of the stuff she does in later episodes are every bit as heroic as things that Arya does, you know?
Yeah.
She just has to play a different game than Arya. Now, these guys are the Devil's Horsemen, who is this group of jousting stunt riders that did this really incredible tourney work. You know, we had very little time to shoot these sequences, and weather did not cooperate. Oh
God, this bit.
Yeah, that's great. Just linger a little longer for the people. There we go.
I've got a phobia of things around my neck, so this really...
This isn't good for you, then, huh?
Yeah, this gets to me.
Jefferson died well. Well done, Sir Hugh. We had very little time to shoot this sequence, and I think, you know, Brian Kirk, our director, and the stunt team, and everyone just did a really great job. And under pretty tight circuit, there's this scene, and then there's the joust in episode 5. And it would have been, you know, of course, it would have been nice to really do the huge tourney that is described in the book with the melee and the procession.
Lovely little tale of brotherly love.
My first draft of the script was...
The Hound.
You would have needed Peter Jackson's Hobbit budget to shoot it. I had, like, a parade of knights and a melee montage and all seven Kingsguard coming and saluting the Queen. And at one point, there were villagers singing songs. I mean, it was like Game of Thrones the musical. And you have to learn to write to the realities of a television show.
Gregor's toy. A wooden knight.
This is a great story.
Gregor never said a word. He just grabbed his brother by the scruff of his neck and shoved his face into the burning coals. Held him there while the boy screamed, while his face melted.
Yeah, this bit also proved a little controversial to fans of the books, because, of course, in the book, the Hound tells this story himself to Sansa, and for some various production reasons we couldn't shoot that scene, so we ended up working it in this way and having Littlefinger tell the story. And it's a different, certainly different. I want to assure the fans out there that the Hound and Sansa subplot is alive and well, and it's just going to play out a little differently from the book, and that's okay.
Has it gone to sleep?
Yeah, I know. Thanks a lot, pal.
Lord.
Evidently, he was a fan of the book's version, too. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Now, this, I think, was the very first scene we shot in season one, not counting the original pilot.
My name on it doesn't make it mine.
Again, a scene that I didn't write.
Might put what happened on the King's.
People are going to think, wait a minute, did he write any of this episode?
Ugliness with the wolves.
David and Dan wrote this scene.
And forcing you to kill the beast was extreme.
I started on the show as, in the pilot, as David and Dan's assistant.
How is Sansa?
We were in post on the pilot, and David came up to me one day and said, hey, you want to take a crack at episode 4? And I thought, well, yeah, that's nice. He's giving me an exercise to do, you know, well, because I wasn't doing much during post. And so I wrote the episode thinking purely it was just, you know, to see if one day, maybe in season 3, I was capable of writing something.
You can't help him.
And I had a great time writing it, obviously, handed it in, and David called me the next day and said, well, congratulations, you just wrote episode 4 of season 1 of Game of Thrones.
And you were so good, they took it on.
And they took it on. Fantastic. I can't thank them enough for the opportunity. It's an incredible show to be involved with, and in George's world is the best set of toys that you could play with.
Hmm.
But yeah, as such, since it was my first script, David and Dan had a big hand in what you ended up seeing. My name is all by itself up there, but this is every bit as much their script as it is mine, really.
Seven blessings to good folk.
And to you.
Boy, bread, meat and beer, quickly.
Oh. There's Marillion, the singer, who has a little bit more to do in the book, but I'm glad we got him in here.
Yeah. This was one of my favorite scenes.
Howling of wolves.
One of my favorite bits in the book.
Yeah.
I really like this bit in the book.
And this is pretty much word for word as George wrote it. I mean,
My men can sleep in the stable. As for myself, I don't require a large room.
Why screw with perfection? I mean, it's...
Is there nothing I can do?
Although I am proud of this. I'm proud of this moment here.
You can have my room.
There's Bronn, played by Jerome Flynn.
Great catch.
You can manage food.
In the book, it's just some person that says, you can have my room, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to make it Bronn. So that's our introduction to Bronn, who becomes a major character going forward.
King's Landing. Nothing would more likely ruin...
It's a good link to have, isn't it?
Mm.
Lady Stark. What an unexpected pleasure. I was sorry to miss you at Winterfell.
Do we see Michelle?
We don't. This is her first scene in the episode. And
it's her first scene,
I was just thinking this out, thinking, wow, this is... It's such a huge scene for her that in my mind she was in more of the episode.
I was still Catelyn Tully the last time I stayed here. You, sir. Is that the Black Bat of Harrenhal?
I think she absolutely nails this bit.
Oh yeah, this was the Catelyn audition scene
and
as well.
And his lady went, a true and honest friend to my father.
And man, she your nailed it then and she's nailing it here.
She is.
And then Brian, I think, just did a terrific job with this scene. The,
Red
the tension.
Is always a welcome sight at River Run. My father counts Jonas Bracken amongst his oldest and most loyal bannermen.
Our lord is honored by his trust.
I envy your father all his fine friends, Lady Stark, but I don't quite...
It's a nice way of getting in the different house names.
Yeah, it's fun. And the importance of... You know, your house, your sigil, what that means. If someone sees, you know, the Black Bat of Harrenhal on your surcoat, that says something about you and what's expected of you. That's crucial in this scene because she believes wholeheartedly that this man tried to murder her son, and she makes what could be interpreted as a very rash decision, but she's a mother.
This man came into my house as a guest. And there conspired to murder my son.
You could say this is the bit where it all goes all starts to go pear-shaped.
This is it. This is the start of what becomes the War of the Five Kings in season two. Absolutely. This is where things really get going. And it was a fun, it was a great, oh, there it is. It was a great final moment to have. Wow, and that's it. That's the episode.
That's it. That's the end of the episode. I really kind of got caught by the end of that. It's the wonderful thing about having watched these back now is, of course, it's such a huge show with so many different areas that you know all of these actors very well from having spent 6 months or so in Belfast with them. But you only know your part of the story. That's the only bit you've got any idea about what's going on. And so watching it back, watching the whole thing back, was just such a joy, seeing what everyone else had done and just being able to enjoy the show.
And it was fun just now to watch it with the dulcet tones of Kit Harington's voice in my headphones. So, thanks for watching, folks. We'll see you in season two.
Thanks for watching.